The Guardian. Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly in today's up-to-the-minute update. Premier League, Man United survive visit to Spurs, but could Tottenham soon be playing in front of a Stratford end? Eh? Meantime, West Ham carved up by Gunners, but Wayne not the only bridge to get burnt after club leak Tory pleasing plans to axe Grant. And at Anfield, King left speechless as appearance in front of crowd is followed by stuttering performance. More on all of that to come. Elsewhere, who pushed Steve Harper? Will Liverpool really buy Van Bommel? Have Real Madrid thrown away points in the Spanish title race? All of that, plus Bundesliga posts and more in Football Weekly. Hello, I'm James Richardson with Barney Rone, Paul McInnes and Raphael Honigstein. We'll be your pod hosts today. So, Paul McInnes, hello.
Hiya.
Stupor Sunday.
It was pretty dull, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a New Year's resolution to not watch as much football on television because I wasted too much of my life. And you go into these things and it says Super Sunday and you get very excited. And you
hat-trick
think,
Sunday.
Combustible stuff. And then you end up watching 4.5 hours of utter tedium. I did watch the United.
All right, that might seriously compromise today's podcast. That laughing was because Raphael Honigstein knocked over, in a very un-Raphael-like moment, knocked over a glass of water.
It's all right, though. It's gone down a kind of plug, which has got wires coming out of it,
right, okay.
And which are connected to all of us.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, Barney, though, you, in your controversial position as chief castigator of the Anfield faithful, did watch the Merseyside derby, I'm sure.
Yeah, I watched it. I didn't think it was particularly boring. I think it was
quite a good game. Good. Yeah, it was good.
I enjoyed it. And I suppose coming back from 2-1 down, that's kind of looks quite good at the end of it. And the players had quite a lot of fight and spunk and spirit about them.
Indeed they did. 2-2, as you say, you suggest that Liverpool coming back makes them the happier. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Everton, generally, they've done well against the bigger teams and not so well against the teams around them in the relegation area. So maybe they'll see this as a step backwards to drop 2 points there. But I thought Everton would be really disappointed with that. I mean, everyone talks about Liverpool, but 2-1 up, they would have expected to see it out.
An Everton team without Saha, with Yakubu Nat, Leicester, with PNR drop because he's about to make a move, apparently. I thought it was an impressive performance by Everton. Sorry, Paul.
How did Liverpool's new look midfield? Because Kenny appears to be wanting to put in the youngsters and kids with Liverpool spirit about them. Did Spearing cut the mustard?
Well, you know, it's a very difficult game to come into. I like the fact that he's playing these kids. I thought the right back got slightly duffed up at times, Kelly, although he's obviously a good player and I hope he stays in the team. I didn't really understand Johnson at left back, and he was sort of at fault for the Everton goal on 46 minutes. But he's just working with the players he's got, hasn't he? They need a new left back, a new central midfielder, a new striker, a fit and good Joe Cole, and they'll probably be all right.
Mm. Both clubs now 4 points off the bottom. Producer Ben asks, will the next Merseyside derby involve Tranmere? Hey, Raphael.
Hey.
Van Bommel, Bayern want to get rid of him. There's only 6 months left on his contract. Is he coming to Anfield?
I know he's heavily linked over the weekend with a suggestion that Bayern are just waiting for someone to pay €3 million, which is still a lot for a player who's running out of contract in 4.5 months' time. I don't think it's going to happen. I think, he's still in the Champions League. He's got things to do. He can still go to Liverpool in the summer. Why go now? Mm. It wouldn't really make a lot of sense.
Milan, the other club that's been strongly linked with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's old enough to play for them.
Yeah, that's fair. Now, we haven't actually touched on weather, and Barney, you'll be good on this, whether Kenny has taken Liverpool further with this latest game. The first one that he really had a proper amount of time to prepare the side for, but it's still, what, 1-8 in all competitions?
Yeah, what can he do? All he can do is make them run around a bit more because he hasn't had a chance to bring any new players in. He's, I suppose, made a few tactical changes. They ran around a bit more, so that wasn't bad. I imagine under Hodgson they probably would have lost 2-1. So that was quite good. But there's not really anything he can do. He's not had a chance to change
it. That squad is as good as Bolton's or Stoke's, though. No? I would have thought with more than just running around, if you had, say, Paul Lambert in charge of Liverpool, a tactical genius, a motivator of men, then you would be able to get that team functioning. They've still got one of the best strikers in Europe up front.
Or maybe he will. He's only had a week there so far.
Yeah. I mean, the pessimism about Liverpool, I think, is kind of talking... It's unnecessary, and I think it's talking them into a bit of a corner. The fans should expect more, and I think the players should expect more from what they're currently getting.
Well, that's fair. Claudio Ranieri says he's delighted to be linked with Liverpool. Has anyone linked him with Liverpool?
He has.
Yeah.
He's a very nice, sort of happy, friendly man, isn't he? Certainly he's delighted by lots of things.
Good. Meanwhile... At the top, well, City briefly went into first place in a very, very, very thrilling match with Wolves. Crikey, it was thrilling, wasn't it? At the end, you know, when Wayne Hennessy was bundling up towards the other end, you thought maybe Wolves are going to snatch it, but they didn't.
No. They didn't, no.
Confirmation. Dzeko, were you surprised to see him in the starting lineup? Add Adam Johnson too.
I certainly was surprised to see him in the lineup. He hadn't played for over a month, apart from some indoor footy in Croatia. With some mates. So, yeah, it was surprising. I guess the thinking there was that he's not going to play in the cup. So they might as well give him a run around against Wolves. And he looked very good. And I think he sort of showed his perhaps greatest talent, something that you can't see if you only see the goals and the highlights on YouTube. He makes everybody else look better.
Because?
Because he is so good at linking up with players, a little bit like Van Persie does for Arsenal, who just gives him an extra kind of dimension because he's such an all-round player who can bring people on, hold it up, just does everything that you want.
Amazing at keeping holding the ball up.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks a lot better on the ball. That assist for Yaya's goal was lovely. Mm. And pulling wide as well, I thought he was going to be central through the middle all the time, but
yeah, they were very fluent up front. I mean, with Tevez at his best days at United, you could say he was always all over the place, and they were interchanging constantly, Rooney, Ronaldo and Tevez, and that was part of the genius. And if Mancini can get them to play like that, they're going to be formidable.
Were you worried at all about what he said after the game about, oh, it was really hard, it was much harder? I mean, when people say things like that, you always get slightly... Is he that sort of player, or would he be okay?
Well, when he came to the Bundesliga from Teplice in the Czech League, he kept falling down because in the Czech League it was even less physical, and he was expecting to get a lot of free kicks. But he got rid of that side of his game, and I just think he was talking about the pace and sort of the general hurly-burly of the game there. That kind of surprised him.
He said it with a smile as well. Mm. So
yeah. I think you want your player when he arrives to say, yes, this is really tough. If he comes and says, oh, this is a bit of a...
yes,
laugh,
this is a doddle.
You're going to worry.
I'm off to Argentina. Can I just put in a word for Gareth Barry, who thought, from what I saw of that game, put in a very impressive performance.
Did he not give away the ball for the Wolves' first goal?
Yeah, he might have done, but he also made a lot of good interceptions and was involved in a lot of that counter-attacking play kind of at the base of that fulcrum. And
is he going to Inter Milan? Is that right?
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
I don't know. There's nothing in today's Gazetta.
Well,
if he is going, I imagine it will take him a very long time to get there.
Well, I've read in a top UK newspaper Gareth Barry's sending out invites for his 30th birthday written with invisible ink that only become apparent when they're warmed up, and they cost $7,000 to print.
Cool.
Whether this is true or not, I have no idea, but it's good enough for me.
I think he works for MI6. Gareth Barry, super spy. I suppose he'd lull people into a false sense of security.
Why?
Well, he just kind of looks incompetent or whatever, and a bit slow.
Yeah,
it quite suits him. Not really that visible, but sort of there doing a job.
Fascinating though this is, I want to talk about Spurs Man United. We've kind of come on to that, haven't we? There was a notion coming into this that Man United needed to lose this match for the title race to still be open and not be a procession, etc. Now, Hosho, posting in, says, don't know about that. United still have games against Arsenal at the Emirates, Man City and Chelsea twice to play, not to mention Liverpool at Anfield, although clearly he does. What do you think?
Well, I was at White Hart Lane. And
excellent.
And I wasn't quite sure whether I was terribly impressed or really bored the United. They were superb at the back, and Rooney and Berbatov showed glimpses of an understanding, but the midfield was terrible. I mean, collectively, the four midfield were just so pedestrian and didn't turn up. Giggs on a 600th game looked like a man who'd played 600th games. It was quite awful to watch, really. And Fletcher and Carrick, very, very sort of administrative in the football they play. They kind of keep the ball well, but don't really do anything with it. And Spurs had most of the possession, had most of the play, but couldn't break them down because they were so brilliant at the back yet again.
Mm.
Do you think Vidic is the outstanding kind of candidate for player of the season at the minute? He was magnificent yesterday.
He was absolutely superb. He was so sharp. He was so tough. He was. Although he was, curiously enough, he was out-jumped by Van der Vaart for nearly.
Yeah.
You know, if Van der Vaart scores it, I don't think we'd be having that debate necessarily. But no, he was absolutely superb. But it's really odd with United. I mean, they are invincible, but some of the, probably the most unconvincing invincibles you'll ever see.
They're set up quite different. Don't you think that, I mean, Vidic's obviously a brilliant player, but assessing how well he's playing, you've got to temper it with the fact that he's got Fletcher and Carrick basically sitting in front of him.
Yeah,
whereas
sure.
You can see when you take those players away, I mean, look at John Terry recently has had a terrible time because he's not being shielded in the way he once was.
I was trying to think of a coinage actually for United not being, you know, being invincibles, but not that good. But
unconvincing invincibles.
The unconvincibles.
The unconvincibles. Wow. This is where it was born.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I was the person who was predicting Man United to drop out of the top four, although I didn't specify which season. I think crucially.
I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Fergie, and you know, because I think the beautiful football that United sometimes play is quite often outweighed by a combative, sneering attitude, and I think that was the thing that you saw yesterday. The Raphael sending off may not have been justified, but he was sniping at the referee all day. There was
saucy language, wasn't there?
Yeah, and there was lots of kind of borderline nasty tackles going on from United, and it works. You know, that attitude is what they display against Arsenal a lot, and it does work, but it doesn't win me over to them. And I really, really, really want Arsenal to win the title.
Do you?
Yeah, I really do.
All right, Paul. Well, Arsenal, you know, made a very positive step in that direction with a convincing performance there at Upton Park.
Sorry, can I just say something on the Mike Dean language thing?
Oh, yeah.
Just quickly. Everyone in White Hart Lane could hear what he was being shouted at. It was F off all the time. And,
yeah.
And I think this happened before with him and Rooney. And he just seems to lap it up and doesn't react. I mean, maybe he likes it or something. I don't know. It's really odd because if you can get banned for sending a Twitter with somebody in a United shirt, but then another ref is being told F off a million times and nothing happens, that sends out a weird message.
Gareth Bale delivered again, I think, in a big match.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I thought his crossing was actually quite substandard Bale stuff.
No, I thought his crossing was quite...
I know I'm the one who doesn't know anything, but he continually overhit his crosses.
Not continually.
He bleeding did. He never connected with one of his own players with his crosses.
Well, he didn't connect, but he did put a couple of lovely balls right across the six-yard line.
And some distance beyond as well.
People always say, oh, he had a right to expect someone to be there. But the commentators always say that. Do you think that's right? You could expect someone to be on the end of that.
If you're putting a ball low across the six-yard box, I think there's a
But that's English football, isn't it? It's like putting the ball in an area and expecting someone. It's the science of English football.
Right, well, the gloves are very much off.
Is it the best football?
Yeah, it's quite competitive. Has everybody had a grumpy weekend or something?
No.
Is it the weather?
It's the weather.
I didn't think it was unfair, that game.
Good. We can all agree on that. And on that note, let's move on to Arsenal's performance at Upton Park. Fantastic. What a debut for Wayne Bridge. Now, some people unkindly have said, was this the worst debut ever? Was it?
I don't know. I think there's been a consensus for a couple of years that Wayne Bridge is a terrible footballer. When a couple of years before that, he was a brilliant left back. I think it's probably truth is in the middle there someplace.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a great game, but Walcott played very well.
Yeah.
I think Walcott, for me, a lot of people talk about Van Persie, he scored a lovely goal, but Walcott is really interesting. I think he scored. His goal was wonderful, real poacher's goal, and his delivery from the right was very good. He's obviously kind of got the pace. He was taking up good positions off that, you know, either quite far wide to the touchline or when Bridge was out wide, he was pulling in close. It was quite clever.
So you saying Walcott made Bridge look bad? Not Bridge making Walcott look good?
I would say the other way around.
All right, interesting.
But I think you're right about Van Persie, Rafa. I think it's really important him. I mean, he's really important for Arsenal, isn't he? I mean, him coming back and scoring a couple of goals is massive for them. That's like Rooney coming back into form for United.
Mm.
Absolutely. I think Bridge might well turn out to be the costliest loan move ever if he takes him down because... I think in wages, even if we can assume that City subsidised some of the wages, he'd still cost them the best part of $2 million just for those 6 months. And if they do go down, then you know they can add, I don't know, another $50 million that they lose on top of that.
Yeah. He attempted four tackles, lost all of them, and was responsible for all three goals, or certainly at fault for all three goals, but he had only just arrived. Not the only slightly perplexing decision by West Ham's owners in the build-up to that game. Talk indeed on Saturday morning was rife that it would be Avram Grant's last game in charge with Martin O'Neill taking over.
Yeah, and then, but 2 hours before kick-off, people were tweeting that it was going to be Martin Yole. I don't know who, whether Gold and whatever his name is, Sullivan, are quite chatty people to the press and are giving people lines all the time or not. I don't have any access to them. But they're certainly taking the name of West Ham United through the mud right now, I think. Mm.
And it does seem that the whole leak and all the speculation, there does seem to have been equally some contact with O'Neill, and he now appears rather less enthusiastic than he was.
Well, obviously
before.
Somebody thought that the deal was done and was briefing, and then O'Neill hesitated for whatever reason, and now
they're left
hanging. Do you think it would be a
good match? Hanging. Good match at West Ham, I'm not so
sure.
Well,
I think anyone would be an improvement on Avram Grant, so... And despite all the terrible work he's done there, they're only 3 points away from safety, so you have to make that move sometime.
When you say terrible work, what specifically are you referring to?
Well, no work, really.
Ah.
Yeah.
It's
a bit like, imagine you are somehow find yourself appointed the head of a major investment bank, even though you have absolutely no idea. And you come into your third board meeting and the 11 section chiefs are sitting there and they're looking at you and you realize that you have no idea what you're talking about. So you say to them, you know what, guys, just carry on. Carry on what you're doing. And that's been his management style.
Well, it's worked for some other managers. Well,
it works with a team that works well, but it doesn't work with a team that doesn't work well.
Right.
And, you give him a mediocre team, he takes them down. You give him a good team, he takes them almost to a title. It's so hands-off that, you know, it's sort of in the laps of the gods. Anything might happen on the pitch because he's just not there.
Is he going back to Chelsea?
As what?
As a director of football? There has been talk that he would be coming in some kind of directorial
role. This might be some sort of legal nicety because there's obviously still this debate of was he fired or was he not? Was he offered another position? You know, that makes a difference when it comes to the payoff. So maybe Chelsea are saying, well, the offer is still there for legal reasons, but I don't think that he's going to be there as director of football.
All right, then.
West Ham never should have got rid of Zola and Clark. I thought that was a good double act.
No. Maybe they shouldn't have messed Alan Kerbyshire around. They were fourth in the table when that happened.
he wasn't giving the fans the football they deserve.
I mean, Abramovich made a mistake that Portsmouth and West Ham paid very heavily for.
Fantastic stuff, fantastic. That's it for part one. In part two, all sorts of exciting things and a special announcement. Here's that special announcement. Join me and the panel for a special live recording of the UK's most popular football podcast. The 17th of February, that's a Thursday, we're going to be live.
Why? Yeah.
Well, Barney, off the record, it's because Sid Lowe heard the one that we did in that pub in Liverpool and quite fancied a bit of that. Sid's going to be flown into London, specially.
Right.
The audience is going to applaud as we each come on, you know, through a special door.
There's
with some kind
audience.
Of catchphrase. He'll come in and say, but wait, there's a caveat. Rubbish. And everyone will go, hey.
Where's the audience going to be?
Barney, what's your catchphrase going to be as you come through the door?
Oh, God.
That's it. Excellent. We could run with this for a while, but I think listeners would appreciate if we didn't. You probably have to be a member of Guardian Extra, the shadowy secret covert organisation, etc., to get tickets to this. And even then, you'll probably have to pay for them. Am I right, Ben? Because we have to fund Sid's flight somehow.
Selling tickets for this.
It's the day after the Arsenal game.
Right, okay.
Yeah, not the Arsenal one. It's the Emirates leg of that. So we'll be talking about that.
Great. It'll be brilliant.
Great is the word. More details on the website as they become clearer. In the meantime, let's get Sid on the phone. Not that horrible Skype business. Please, producer Ben. Hello.
Oh, yes.
Perdón. I think you got the wrong number, Ben. Sid Lowe, are you there?
Hello.
Sid. We just had a comedy interlude. It was quite bizarre, actually, when producer Ben erroneously dialed a digit, and we ended up with a poor Spanish housewife. Oh, I don't know.
I bet she gave you a far better review of the weekend than I could.
Well, she just went, ¿Quién es? A lot. Well, there was this eerie silence while Jimbo kind of...
She didn't go...
No, it wasn't that one.
That's a pity.
No. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Very, very well. Are you excited to be coming over? We've arranged for a dog sitter. Or you may be bringing...
What do you mean a dog sitter? I was trying to bring Stella to the pod.
All right, then. All right, so Estella's going to be in
the... The only thing is I'm a bit worried about the weightlessness, James, as she floats around the pod and her hair goes everywhere. It could be messy.
Well, the Russians have already done pioneering work in dogs in space. Luckily, though, this event will be at the Guardian's headquarters all the way down on planet Earth. However, you did mention messy, which brings us on to the weekend's events in the Liga. Although not in quite as neat a way as it might do because he didn't score. And actually, I want to talk about Real Madrid. What happened?
He's rubbish,
Sid?
James. Messi and Ronaldo both didn't score this weekend. They are rubbish.
Now, tell us about the Real Madrid game, Sid.
I will. For the first time in 13 matches, not including the Clásico, Real Madrid didn't win. They lost last night. Well, they didn't lose. They drew, but they lost in terms of, you know, the draws are the new defeats in La Liga because Real Madrid and Barcelona, you know, dropped so few points. Real Madrid drew 1-1 with Almeria last night. And when I say that draws are new defeats, this really does make a huge difference because it means at the halfway stage of the season, and for those who don't know, the Spanish season is a mirror image. So you play everyone in the first half of the season, and then in the same order, you play everyone again in the second half of the season. So the halfway stage really does make a difference. At the halfway stage, Real Madrid are now 4 points behind Barcelona, and it's 4 points which are effectively five because it's head-to-head goal difference at the end of the season. And of course, Barcelona beat Real Madrid 5-0. In other words, Madrid would have to win 6-0 to make up not just the points, but the point difference. To put this into context, a 4 or 5 point lead, Barca have dropped 5 points all season. So it really genuinely is a big, big deal that Madrid couldn't win a game for once.
Well, hang on, if they've dropped 5 points in the first half of the season, that means that a 4 point gap is eminently doable in the second half.
Assuming that Real Madrid can win every single game between now and the end of the season when one of them is against Barcelona.
Yes.
And they would not only have to win it, but probably win it 6-0.
Yeah.
Did Jose blame the draw on a lack of a slightly immobile old centre-forward that he's so craving?
No, but this story did come back slightly to bite him, and this is very significant. Mourinho complained about the referee after the game, as he's wont to do week after week, and it's very interesting that 3 weeks ago, Mourinho came out with a piece of paper in his hand with 13 mistakes from the referee. The two following weeks, when the referee more or less helped Real Madrid, he was asked about the referees after the game. He said, I can't say, it's far too soon, I haven't seen a replay. And yet, 2 weeks ago, you had a report in your hand immediately after the match. This weekend, when it went against Real Madrid also, he believes he again had a little bit of a go about the referee. What is interesting about the number nine thing is that Mourinho left Benzema on the bench and played a very strange formation with basically four people playing behind the striker, but no striker. So one of them occasionally was forced to push up, which was Ozil. Occasionally it was Cristiano Ronaldo, and occasionally it was Kaká. He left Benzema on the bench after the game. Jorge Valdana, the director general of the club, and the man who's been a little bit irritated by Mourinho's constant public demands for a striker, said, we were put off by all the talk about the striker. That's been a real problem in the build-up to this game. And then he said, and anyway, we did have a number nine who the coach chose to leave on the bench.
Mm. All right, so is the Van Nistelrooy move, is that all on the back burner now?
No, not at all. Real Madrid would very much like it to go through. Van Nistelrooy publicly said, at least to Spanish media, after his game at the weekend against Real's side, which was obviously caused quite a lot of interest in Spain, he publicly said that he would like to go. He would very much like to be allowed to go back to Real Madrid. But understand, from what's been said here at least, Hamburg is saying no. Real Madrid, who allowed Van Nistelrooy to go for free, are now more or less demanding that Hamburg let him go back for free on a six-month deal.
Very strange.
They think it's going to be difficult. Real Madrid do recognise it's going to be difficult, and they're a little nervous about it. The left field suggestion in all this now is that maybe Tevez comes back into the equation.
Mm. All right, Sid, one final thing. Barney Rone was waxing eloquent about not the best player in the world, Iniesta's fantastic goal against Malaga.
Yeah, it was lovely. And Barcelona was sort of moving the ball around on the edge of the area, spread wide, and then it was kind of rolled back in onto the edge of the box. And Iniesta just side-footed it as if it was a simple pass, I mean, crashing in off the post. He's playing really, really well, and for the first time, is completely free of injury. He's started every single game in the first half of the season so far. He's starting to add one or two goals, which is something that was perhaps always lacking, at least to some extent, in the past. And I think he's a brilliant player. But, and of course, we're looking at a Barcelona side now that are so brilliant, it's almost boring. It's become routine, the extraordinary things they do.
Bundesliga, it's back. The league that makes the Liga look competitive, Rafael. Tell us about that.
It's so one-sided, it's become a joke, really. Dortmund have won their 15th game from 18, and this was supposed to be the big, difficult one away to Leverkusen, the most credible title contenders, or had been before that game. And once again, they made it look effortless in the second half. After kickoff, they had 6 minutes in which they scored three goals. Leverkusen were completely destroyed, and all was left was for Dortmund to sort of politely decline any talk of a championship, with everyone sort of smirking and winking and saying, yeah, of course we know, we think we might do it, etc. So they were absolutely brilliant. And of course, just to rub it in a way, Bayern, who talked themselves up and talked about Dortmund perhaps not coping with the pressure or showing signs of weakness, continued where they left off and in really stupid fashion conceded a goal 5 minutes before the end to only draw at Wolfsburg in a game that really should have won. They missed a penalty. Wolfsburg missed a penalty. It was a madcap game on a terrible pitch, but on balance, Bayern should have easily won it. And it was yet again the sort of game that they kind of seemed to throw away this season. That's why they're only fifth.
Fifth on 30 points, Borussia Dortmund on 46. Scientists indicate a 16-point gap. And Steve McLaren, watch?
Steve McLaren, I mean, the point helped him a lot. He's still not out of the woods yet, because there were talks of Dieter Hoeneß, the general manager, meeting up with Huub Stevens, the ex-Schalke manager, ex-Hertha manager. Hoeneß has denied it. I think that realistically, McLaren will have three or four more games to show what he can do. If you were to lose the next couple, let's say, talk of him getting fired would be back. But I think in the meantime, after Dzeko leaving and with the money burning a hole in Dieter Hoeneß's pocket, there's more talk of him transforming the team, bringing in new players, and then seeing what he can do with them.
Paul?
I'm just wondering, if you could explain to an ignoramus why the big drop-off in Bayern this season.
The easy answer would say they'd been with Arjen Robben for half a year. He just made his debut back against Wolfsburg slightly earlier than anticipated, because Frank Berube was substituted with another injury, which now has turned out not to be that bad. I mean, he obviously makes a big difference. But I think overall, you know, a few things have come together. There has been definitely a post-World Cup tiredness in all these players. They've had 13 players, I think, who stayed all the way at the World Cup. They didn't really bring anyone new in, which was a big problem, I think, in hindsight. And they've had many games like this Wolfsburg game where they completely dominate, should score three or four goals in the first half, somehow don't do it, and then concede stupid goals because they can't defend. So it just makes for a bad combination.
I'd like to ask about Uli Hoeneß, who came out and gave it to Sepp Blatter in very real terms, saying that obviously to win a World Cup you have to make under-the-table payments, which is pretty direct stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said, in its time, given the way that FIFA are treating the game, for the strong federations, he mentions England, Spain, Germany, to take a stand. Now, what's been the reaction in Germany to that, and is it in any way an indication of a groundswell of anti-FIFA action?
I think it's an indication of sort of the popular opinion of FIFA, which has been the lowest ever. The problem is that the German FA, as far as FAs are concerned, are fairly compliant and have always supported Blatter, and they're sort of known as the yes-sayers. You know, even Beckenbauer has been pretty supportive of Blatter, and Hoeneß is an outsider. That's why he's making these statements. But there is not enough will within the people higher up. For example, the DFB president, Gerd Zwanziger, will take over Beckenbauer's job in the Exco committee to take a stand against Blatter. I think they're too afraid, and I think they're sort of pragmatic in their approach and say it's better to be in with these guys than trying to topple them, which is not going to work. It's sad, but that's how it is.
Time to be proud of Panorama again then, though.
Yeah, absolute more. That's it for part two. Yes, it is. More from the weekend coming up after this. Let's get this out of the way, shall we? Serie A, Paul McInnes. Hey, Barney, how about that Ibrahimovic goal?
Yeah, what a goal it was. The most shocking bit about it was I wasn't sure it was him at first, because it was just this man with slightly long, flappy hair running quite fast.
What are you talking about?
The Ibrahimovic goal.
Yeah.
And then, an amazing strike with his left foot.
He's 27. Somebody hoofs the ball up from Milan's defence, and there's a couple of defenders there. And this is Milan at Lecce, who are down in the bottom three. And there's a couple of Lecce defenders there. Ibra gets to it first, chests it down. And then basically he's got two defenders between him and goal. He's 27 metres out, according to the Gazetta statistics. And he somehow swings and hooks it past the two defenders and around into the far corner of the goal. It's very well worth seeking out. Mm. But despite that, I mean, the Gazetta's headline this morning was, it's a wasted Ibra, because despite the masterpiece by the Swede, they have their second draw in a row, because Milan then conceded late on, and Lecce get a valuable point. But most importantly, Inter, who had a 4-1 win against Bologna, close in. They've had three from three in the league under Leonardo, and they've made up, how many points is it? 4 points in the last two games on Milan. So they're now 9 points behind Milan with two games in hand. Very, very exciting indeed, Paul.
I say Mourinho couldn't help but say something in praise of Leonardo.
Yeah.
Saying that Leo, he obviously understands players.
They're chums.
Yeah, yes, but also he's replaced
there's
Benitez.
Benitez agenda there, yeah, very probably.
Can't give it up.
No. Can't let it lie. No, indeed not.
Apparently he was very influential in the Benitez sacking, the word on the street is.
Really?
Mourinho, yes.
Well, he certainly was very active on the tweets when Leonardo came in. You know, apparently he tweeted all the players to say, treat Leo well, he's my chum.
So texted them.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so Milan, 4 points clear at the moment of Napoli and Lazio, and then Roma still, who've been unbelievably lucky with the refereeing in their last couple of games, and then Juventus, and then Inter. That's it.
It's been a story in Italy that the Fiorentina-Debrecen Champions League game from 2009 has been named in a German court as a rigged game.
No, hasn't been mentioned at all, actually. Very interesting. What has been a story is Palermo, who got beaten by Cagliari, where Roberto Donadoni, former Italy manager, former Milan and Italy great, is doing a great job. But Palermo beaten by them, and Maurizio Zamborini, the ever-entertaining president of Palermo, says, referees, we should put them all in prison. They're either incompetent or in bad faith. Prison's the solution. There you go. Palermo are now just behind Inter. They've dropped down to seventh. Good. Now, Mr. Gareth E says, I'm becoming increasingly unhappy at the sort of uprooting from White Hart Lane. I think it stinks. Where's this actual demand for new season tickets coming from? And never mind the impact on West Ham, what about poor Leighton Orient? He goes on at some length with a series of very good points about why Spurs shouldn't be moving to the Olympic Stadium, or rather knocking down the Olympic Stadium and then building something else on the site. Barney, you say this isn't going to happen.
Well, I just don't think it is going to happen. People
really?
Often talk about these things. There's an opportunity there, but it's quite funny in a way, though, isn't it? Because Spurs have been niggled for as long back as, well, longer than anyone can remember, by an upstart club arriving in their neck of the woods and taking away their fans and, you know, get back to where they came from. And now they're going to do exactly the same thing to East London if they can. But my instinct is not going to happen.
Would it be wrong if it did?
Yeah, I think so. Improve the transport links to White Hart Lane. Do what you can with the ground there. Improve it. Just stay in Tottenham. You know, what is the point of moving to East London? Just to try and, you know, it's a bit franchisey, isn't it?
Cheaper than redeveloping White Hart Lane.
Well, it may well be cheaper, but, yeah. You know, it's Tottenham Hotspur.
They're a business.
Yeah, well, yeah, if that's what it is, they're a business, go there. Maybe every single team.
It does mark a line between being a club with part of the soul of the community, or saying, no, we're a business.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other way around to look at it is the Stratford Stadium is something that was supposed to, you know, the bid was sold on regenerating this part of East London, building something for the community. And if you're going to allow a club from a different part of the city, because they've got more money, to come in, raise the ground, get rid of all the other facilities and just build a football stadium, then that's kind of another snook to that.
It's also a soulless prefab. The stadium itself would have to be totally redesigned. It's not a football stadium. It's not designed to last.
This is the counter-argument, is that much as it seems wrong, the idea of Spurs moving there, West Ham inhabiting this kind of rejigged Olympic stadium with a running track around it doesn't sound too appealing either.
No, it doesn't
for football fans, but, you know, the Olympics is about more than...
Yeah, no, they can have a stadium for the Olympics. I don't think anyone's questioning that.
No, but there's supposed to be a legacy in that area that involves more than just football. It's like...
Well, what are you going to do with a 60,000 stadium with an athletics track?
Well, make it a primary athletics venue and build local clubs into that, allow them use of the stadium. That was part
London
of the pitch.
London doesn't have a proper athletics venue. Crystal Palace is, you know, it's falling to bits.
Mm.
That's what that should be. It should be a legacy from the Olympics, and it should be for the community and to be a world-class venue. And that's the end of the story. That's what it should be.
Yeah,
why are we
man.
Trying to stuff football clubs into it?
Back off, suit.
Yep.
There was some popular unrest yesterday against Ooh. This whole Stratford thing. People shouting, you can stick your Stratford up your...
Jaxi.
And a banner going round. And I don't know if you saw it on Sky.
Say?
Well, no to Stratford or something like that.
All
they
right.
tried to hold it up behind the Sky studio. I don't know if you saw it on television. And the stewards came and got them down. And there was a big, almost a... It didn't come to blows, but it was quite a heated debate. And then outside the stadium after the game, there were a lot of people shouting all sorts of anti-Stratford stuff. Stratford
right.
with an A, not an E.
Yeah. All right, then. Dublin Roo says, what's the feeling there regarding Darren Ferguson's reappointment at Peterborough?
It was quite funny watching him on the Football League show on Saturday night, because he was being collared by Clem, the effusive BBC reporter, and he just wouldn't look him in the eye, because the Clem wanted to know, well, why'd you walk out on this club, and then when things go tits up, walk straight back in again? And it's obviously something to do with a very complicated arrangement with the chairman. And Ferguson just wouldn't look him in the eye at all. But meanwhile, all the Brighton and Hove Albion cheerleaders were doing their pom-poms in the background, and it was a totally incongruous situation. The thing about League One is it's right in the mix right now. It's quite a few teams. All the former producer Pete, who's a Charlton fan, was insisting that everybody down to ninth is in the mix, and that's mainly because his Charlton side are in seventh. But, you know, Peterborough... They're reasonably well placed, and Ferguson knows how to do it in that division. I think Brighton look to be favourites, but
do you think?
It could be second spot.
Yeah, Brighton massive favourites.
Yeah, well, we're after their top winger. Norwich City are after Elliot Bennett, who scored a lovely goal at the weekend.
All right, and Norwich City, you had that 90th minute equaliser at
the Norfolk Cafu. Russell Martin scored his fourth goal of the season. Yeah,
right. Okay.
Yeah. But I was what I was most struck by watching that game, as I was in attendance, was that Craig Bellamy's lost his pace.
Really?
I mean, he's been out of the side, so maybe he's not a top form, but that guy, he was still, you know, a speedster last season.
Mm.
Never even troubled our centre-halves who aren't that pacey.
Really?
Mm. I saw him a little while ago, and he still looked pretty quick to me at QPR.
Maybe he's just a little bit out of
Yeah, he's not been playing every week.
QPR still top, but just 2 points ahead now after their draw at Burnley, who have appointed Eddie Howe.
Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of the Bournemouth supporters. But
I think it'll be an interesting appointment, that, because he's obviously done exceptionally well with Bournemouth, with no money, but now he's in a club with really high expectations and a bit of money, and so the pressures will be quite different, I think. But I think he's one for the ladies, apparently. The ladies love the look of Eddie Howe.
He's so a fresh-faced youngster.
He is.
Yep.
Can I just say, Forest, though? If Forest don't, I really think Forest are on for automatic promotion.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You've said it. Captain Spiff says, I'm surprised your 62nd Asian Cup review didn't include the captain of the Indian football team, who's called Climax Lawrence. Is that true?
Yeah, that is true.
That is true. Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's all there is to say about him, but it is true.
Was that is that his birth name, Climax? It doesn't sound very Indian.
Doesn't, does it? But it was certainly an anticlimax that we didn't mention it.
Yeah, I wonder at what point they came up with that name. I mean,
To
the point
know.
Of conception.
Oh, dearie me. There you go. In other news, the rest of the weekend in the Premier League. Now, how about that derby action? Derby of shame or something, I think the Daily Mail was headlining, because you had the fan pushing over the goalkeeper at the Stadium of Light after Sunderland's rather jammy late equaliser in the derby with Newcastle. Raphael, you're nodding your head here.
Well, I prefer English football when it's all streakers and women coming onto the pitch with no clothes on. Now it's all people getting punched and shoved. And
yeah.
What is all this about?
I don't know.
That's not why I came to this country.
The North East derby is, if people invade the pitch, it's likely to be a fat man with no clothes on. So at least you've got the nudity.
Hmm. All right, that's a little bit stereotypical there, Paul.
A little bit, but there's truth in every stereotype, isn't there?
No, that's very true, actually. Now, similarly untroubled by naked ladies was Birmingham Aston Villa. That wasn't the only reason that was a bit disappointing, he said, looking around for somebody who watched this game.
I thought it was quite a good game.
Oh.
I mean, it's kind of been lumped in with the other draws.
Yeah.
But I thought it was all right. It was,
yeah.
The other draws was quite good.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Mm.
But often those games are very boring. these you know, very passionate derby, everyone yelling and kicking each other. But I thought it was all right. That's about it, really.
Okay. Yeah. Only 22,000 at the game. That was because of security measures, is that right?
Yeah, well, we remember what happened in the last meeting between these two teams just before the World Cup decision. Is that right? Pallets were thrown into the crowd.
Well, I was reading afterwards that again, it's on Twitter, so it's probably not entirely verifiable, but that both sets of fans were let out of the ground at the same time, which was a little bit problematic.
Yeah.
Birmingham are not out of trouble. I mean, they've lost Scott Dann, and those two centre-backs were, you know, what their team's built on. And, they're playing Bentley. Bentley's sort of coming in for Larsson, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Larsson's a massive player for them as
Would you not think Bentley could be? I thought he looked impressive.
He hasn't played for ages. You know, he needs
to get back. But he looked impressive, didn't he?
Yeah, he's got big boots to fill, though. Larsson, his set pieces are brilliant, and they rely on set pieces, so he's got to play that role.
Bentley's often have big boots. You know, that's one of the things, the capaciousness of their luggage arrangements. One of the main selling points, I think. In other news, exciting match between West Brom and Blackpool. West Brom finally benching Scott Carson and getting a win, not uncoincidentally, one might think. Well done to West Brom. Boy, did they need that.
They still conceded the two goals, and it was didn't look entirely unporous.
Oh, really?
Did you hear about Odemwingie, what he said after the game?
I didn't.
He scored again. He's had a problem scoring. He said he'd been sitting down with the club psychologist, and he said, "We talked about some pictures in my head, and it really helped."
Yeah.
It's nice to hear players talking like that.
Beppe Signori went through real drought. Three-time top scorer, three seasons in a row with Lazio back in very much the day. And he went to Bologna and had a terrible time. Yeah, Raphael's already got that, oh dear, here we go face on. This therapist, anyway, said to him, he said, look at the landscape, what do you see? Do you see greens or browns? And it was all that Beppe was seeing too much brown. Yeah. And when he convinced him to see more green, he began to think more positive. And he then got him to walk over hot coals in bare feet. After that, you couldn't stop little Beppe from scoring again. So I, for one, say yes to therapy.
PMA. It's all about the PMA, isn't it? You've got to focus, get the PMA.
I lost that. You know why? Because producer Ben said, didn't he have tiny feet as well? Yes, he did. Size 5 boots. And now producer Ben's saying it's easier to firewalk. No. I think the principle of physics is that the broader your feet, the less pressure you're going to have on the red-hot coals. And therefore, surely it would be hotter, I'm thinking. I think you want broader feet, not smaller feet, as you race across them. But you're not even supposed to race. You're meant to pace gently. Has anyone here firewalked?
No, I don't. I think it's a bit of a myth, though. I think it's not actually that difficult to walk across hot coals.
Says Barney Rone.
I remember seeing a television program where they sort of examined it.
Maybe for the live pod, you could get Barney to walk over hot coals.
And now on hot coals,
buy tickets for that.
Yeah. I think when I was younger, I did. When I struggled to score, put pictures into my head to help me, and it sometimes worked.
What kind of pictures were you?
Oh dear. Sorry, Paul, you were making a serious point some time ago.
It was facetious and it's not worth repeating.
Oh, sounds perfect for this podcast. All right, well, that's pretty much it. Although none of us can go until we finish discussing Wigan Fulham, which was, guess what, a draw. Stoke Bolton. Somebody mentioned in the report on Match of the Day, Tunshai's posted up his goals on YouTube. What's this about?
On his Facebook site.
Oh, on his Facebook site.
Yeah, his 10 best goals posted by Tunshai.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's how people keep lists. It's good to know that they actually, because you sometimes interview footballers and is that your best goal you've ever scored? Ooh, I don't know, it might be up there. But Tunchai's obviously I'm going to move that into sixth, move that down to eighth.
How long do you think Tunchai spent combing through his endless back catalogue?
Yeah. I imagine many, many hours.
It was interpreted by the local press as a sort of a come and get me plea to interested clubs, but they never came and got him.
Do you think he might have got a member of his staff to do it rather than doing it himself?
I'd love Tunchai at my club. If I was a president, I'd go out and get him.
Do you have a club?
Go for Tunchai?
Yeah, I do. I don't have a club, no, but...
Can I just say, for Fulham, it's good to see Andy Johnson scoring a goal.
It is, isn't it?
People said his career was over a while back. He was very injured and, you know, they really need a striker, so that's good for them.
Although Moussa Dembélé was back as well. It's going to be a surfeit of strikers very shortly there on the banks of the Thames. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's Football Weekly. We're back on Thursday. Hopefully you will be too. In the meantime, it's a big thank you to producer Ben, to Paul McInnes, Barney Rone and Raphael Honigstein, to Mystery Spanish Woman and Sid Lowe. Have a lovely week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.